I'm John Kroll. The holiday season is, among other things, the season for movies, the time when many of the Oscar contenders make their way to the theaters. On No Limits today, we'll talk about movies, about the good, the bad, the thrilling, and the boring. We'll talk about Girls with Dragon Tattoos, Weeks with Marilyn Monroe, and about how George Clooney looks in Hawaiian shirts. We'll talk about the films we love and hate with our guests, WFYI's own host of film sociology, Matt Soucy, and Nouveau's film critic, Ed Johnson Ott. You can jump into the conversation by calling us toll-free at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, the day's news. Hi, I'm John Kroll. Welcome to No Limits. I am the director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about movies, about the holiday movies, about the year in movies, about the films we love and hate. We're fortunate to have as our guests WFYI's own film critic, Matt Soucy. Matt, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Probably used to this studio by now.
But not from this angle.
All right. So, and Nouveau's film critic, Ed Johnson Ott. Ed, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, John. It's good to be here.
Good to have you guys here. Listeners can join this conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, let's start real quickly. A lot of people are out off work now, and they're looking for things to do if they want to go see a movie right now. Let's get the first bit out of this, the consumer-friendly portion of this conversation, and say, what movie should they go to see that's in the theaters right now? Matt, I'll go with you first.
Well, I'm gonna sidestep your answer and say, I think it's opening tomorrow, but The Artist.
Okay.
Which the Indiana Film Journalists Association named as the best film of the year and was my top pick so far this year. We still got another couple of weeks before I can give you the calendar end of the year official for the time being. But it's a wonderful silent film made in France about a silent film star who whose career goes down after talkies come into play, and he has he meets a young woman whose career goes up. So it's a little Star Is Born, but visually
sounds like also some Valentino references.
A little bit of Valentino references, not the Ken Russell biopic, but
yeah,
yes, but
yeah, the real actor guy,
right? Exactly. But one of the things I noticed that as I was going through my list this year for the year this year in film 2011 is there's a lot of films that are really set in nostalgia or homages, and not just the film critic comparing it from one film to another. Many films like Hugo and Midnight in Paris and The Artist are kind of throwbacks to a different era or a different genre or a different style of film. And I think earlier this year I saw an article in Variety that this year, more than any other year, the most sequels and remakes that were put out this year by Hollywood. So I think that maybe to counterbalance that is these homages or returns or
referential films.
Yeah, exactly. So, and those really, really helped out, especially in certain months where we had to, you know, if we're going to see 2 to 3 to 4 films a week.
Yeah.
It's a nice piece of sherbet to cleanse the palate.
Well, and I'm looking forward to seeing The Artist because the leads in that case were in one of the funniest films I think I've ever seen, OSS 117.
The spy spoof that everybody should go see.
Oh, that is the classic send up of the 60s James Bond films, and really the whole idea of cultural imperialism all by itself. But Ed, how about you? What film do you think people should go see?
Well, I completely agree with The Artist. Adventuresome film goers, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Okay, and why? What makes that spectacular?
It's very stylish. I mean, we're talking brutal stylish, but it's creepy cool.
Okay.
You know, very, very grim, very cool, grim, goth punk. It's a good thriller, but it's the characters that make it. You know, the elaborate plot and the plot twist. If you watch Law and Order or any of the police procedurals, you've seen stuff like that before. It's the characters, and the characters are really effective.
Well, and for those of you who are listening and want to be reassured that you're not listening to a tape from last year, we talked about The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, but we talked about the Swedish version.
Right.
When we did this show last year. Is the Swedish version better, or the new one, the American version with Daniel Craig and Rooney Mara?
There's a lot of similarities. I liked each in different ways, but I enjoyed both. Right now, I'm enjoying the American version more, but I really liked the original Swedish version.
And I was stunned by the Swedish version. I loved Matt Soucy.
Yeah, I finally saw it last night, and I'm still kind of mulling it over. I read your review of it, which you can pick up in Nuvo or check online at nuvo.net. It was like it's really the David Fincher version is really well made.
Mm-hmm.
You have Steve Zaillian doing the adaptation. It's a tight adaptation. It's not a shot by shot remake. It's not Gus Van Sant doing Psycho. But I was watching it. And I kept thinking, besides, is there another reason why this film was made other than because people in Middle America don't want to read subtitles? Because when I heard that they were, you know, last year we talked when they were going to make it a Hollywood version. But it's directed by David Fincher, you know, one of the best filmmakers out there working today. So I don't know. I almost compare it to a really fantastic cover song by a really fantastic band.
And I've heard that from several people, several writers actually. And I don't care. I saw the original. I knew what was going to happen. I saw the similarities, I saw the differences, and it being a remake didn't matter. If they're making it so that American audiences who don't like subtitles will go, fine.
We are talking about movies right now. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I want to pick up on this idea, really, of the referential, the idea that it's a cover. Why is that right now? Why do we see so much of that? Because there is this
familiarity,
feeling when I go
to
the movies that I've seen this before to some degree.
Well, when this was, I think, the quickest turnaround. There was the film, the British comedy Death at a Funeral, that I think, a year, 2 years later was remade by Neil LaBute here in Hollywood.
Shall We Dance?
That's true. You're right on that. Shall We Dance was also another one. It's funny. Ed was mentioning he didn't care that it was remade, and again, it's a well-made film. The other thing it just dawned on me was you watch the American version, they don't pull any punches. As you know, Ed refers to it as creepy cool. There's a couple of scenes involving the female lead and another character. I don't want to give away too much, and it's a family show, but they don't hold back on these couple of really dark, disturbing scenes. So
that's one of the big differences, too. There was considerable controversy over the original, the Swedish original, over the scene in question, to whether we were watching a necessarily graphic image or exploitation.
Yeah.
There's no argument to be made in the American version. It's an ugly, ugly thing. There's no exploitation involved in that scene.
Yeah, well, and I do know some of the dispute, and I appreciate the challenge that Fincher had here, because in addition to the films, you're talking about a series of books that have sold something like 50 million copies that are amazing, and a lot of people now are aware of the story. Deviations from it probably would not be well received, because people do seem to be so devoted to the books. And then the films had quite a following. I mean, they showed up on a lot of people's best 10 lists.
Mm-hmm.
And you were asking about cover films and the like. Mm-hmm. And, I guess here's another reason why I had no problem with the American version of Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Movies, I mean, in large part, the bigger movies are driven by finances more than ever. And, you know, if they can go with a franchise, they go with a franchise. And, you know, if you can pull something that was a TV hit in 1972 and do a movie version, they're still doing that kind of stuff. Given the things we've seen, including Alvin and the Chipmunks, Chipwrecked.
Thank you for not stuttering that title.
If they're going to go with something that's proven, I'd much rather see them go with The Girl with the Golden Tattoo than another Hulk remake.
Well, at least I haven't seen the Alvin and the Chipmunks thing. I think I lost patience when they talked about the Squeakquel.
That's pretty bad.
But Well, what other films are there out there right now that, that people ought to consider seeing? And then we're going to go start looking at the year in review after that.
Hugo is still out, or as I Hugo. Like to call it, a beautifully shot, well-made infomercial for the American Film Institute.
Okay.
But it's Martin Scorsese, and it's actually, for me, one of the two, there were only two films that were released in 3D that mattered. That's this film and the Werner Herzog documentary, Cave of Forgotten Dreams, which I'll talk to a little bit earlier. But it's a fun fantasy, almost fairy tale, this almost Dickensian kid who lives in a train station. He fixes the clocks, and he comes across a filmmaker. And I want to steal a line that Ed used in a review once, and I have to send him royalty checks for this. But I talk about the infomercial. There's
Public radio. Their checks will be small.
Yeah, exactly. We find out a filmmaker who made several hundred movies, and they're all lost because they were melted down and destroyed, and we need to keep this man's work. And it was in your review in the Valley of Ella, where you refer to the message of the film as getting hit over the head with a cardboard tube. And that's what Hugo does. But with this message, I don't mind getting hit over the head about film restoration and seeing silent movies that are still powerful today with kids. But it's really well made, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's aimed more at adults than children. I mean, the more fantastic elements, the children's adventure story part, you can see Martin Scorsese trying really hard to be spontaneous and childlike, but you see it. You feel his effort all the way through. It's a little stilted. The stuff that works so wonderfully that it's absolutely worth seeing. But from what I've seen, the adults are more enthusiastic about the film than the children.
Now, in my house, and of course, I spend probably more time than the average parent when it comes to old movies, but seeing Harold Lloyd and the clock and Safety Last and the Flight to the Moon, those were able to at least register with younger some younger viewers. But yeah, you're right. It is kind of if you're a film geek and a parent, what are you doing? Go now.
Well, and he's so bad with slapstick, too. He's just terrible with his slapstick.
Of course, he's
Well, remember that fight scene in Mean Streets? It's not, that wasn't well choreographed either.
We are talking about movies here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Okay, so we've got Hugo, we've got the girl with the dragon tattoo, we've got the artist when it opens tomorrow. What else would people say?
Ed?
Yeah, I shouldn't be doing this as a movie reviewer, but I've heard great things about Mission Impossible, the latest one. I've heard it's a really fine action film.
Okay.
That it's really, really good.
Well, I think what helps is Brad Bird is directing that, who gave us the Iron Giant. And the Incredibles.
Yeah.
So I think this is his first live-action film.
Live-action.
So there are another film I can think of. It is out. We talked about it earlier off-air. But there are some films in which a single performance will drive, maybe not the best story in the world, but to see Michelle Williams in My Week with Marilyn, playing Marilyn Monroe while shooting the Prince and the Showgirl. And it's this third director who's just trying to get into the business. So it's kind of the behind-the-scenes drama, but it involves a movie icon and the relationship he has with her, with Laurence Olivier, played really, really well by Kenneth Branagh.
A nice little in-joke there to have Kenneth Branagh play Laurence Olivier.
Yeah, and Emma Watson shows up and Judi Dench shows up. So that was another homage, throwback, is the backstage drama, or in this case, behind-the-camera drama. That were a lot of those films that were made back in the 30s and 40s.
Young Adult that's a treat, a nasty little treat. the Diablo Cody and Jason Reitman, the team that were responsible for Juno, doing a really dark comedy drama about an arrest. Charlize Theron.
Either
Theron.
One. Okay, let's call the whole thing.
Yeah,
off.
plays a. A ghostwriter for young adult novels who does her job well because she's an arrested adolescent and an alcoholic. And she comes up with the great alcohol-soaked idea that she'll go back to her small town, rescue her high school sweetheart from his wife and child, which he's very happy with, and everything will be wonderful. And it's about what happens when this walking disaster area hits town.
We are talking about movies here on No Limits with our guests, WFYI film critic Matthew Soucy and Nouveau film critic Ed Johnson Ott. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about movies today here on No Limits, and we're fortunate to have as our guests WFYI film critic Matt Soucy and Nouveau film critic Ed Johnson Ott. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Ann, welcome to the program.
Well, hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
Doing well. Your question, please.
Well, it's just a comment. It has nothing to do with movies.
Okay.
I heard that you had Mr. Johnson on.
Yes.
And he sends to me, I got on his email list, I've never met him, but a weekly summary of free activities in Indianapolis. And it's a wonderful list, and I'm a social worker, and I disseminate it out to about 100 people, and they all use it, and they call me if I don't send it. They want to know where it is, and it's just a wonderful thing. And we get to take our clients out to all these free activities.
Wow.
So, I heard your name. I wanted to say thank you.
Thank you, Ann. That's very kind of you. What she's referring to is it's called the can-do list.
Mm-hmm.
I work with mentally handicapped adults living in the community, and as the budgets keep getting cut and there's less and less funds, the company I work with, Capital City Residential Healthcare, mm-hmm. has we put together a list of all activities that either are free or less than $5, and mm-hmm. it's blown up much bigger than we ever thought it would.
Because funny how things like that happen, isn't it?
People, it came along. It's right when people need it. You know,
yeah,
we're very proud of it.
Well, Ann, thank you very much for the call, and happy holidays.
Okay, thank you. You too.
Sure thing. Okay, we are talking about the best. We have been talking about the best movies, the good ones. Could we talk about some of the stink bombs real quickly?
Oh,
the ones that were the could you give me a worst of the year?
Right as of right now, I'm always putting
qualifier,
an asterisk
with the eight days left.
There's two that really come to mind immediately for me. One is Transformers: Dark of the Moon. Mm-hmm. Yes, the Transformers have something involving the moon landing, mm-hmm. but the other one, which not a lot of people saw, was a film called Sucker Punch.
Oh.
From director Zack Snyder, who gave us the very overrated 300 and the Dawn of the Dead remake. And it's a girl's institution, and critics say quite often that a film is a video. It turns into a video game, or it is a video mm-hmm. game. This is a video game for, as my wife would always say, made by boys for boys. You have girls, you have grown women in schoolgirl outfits who mm-hmm. dance at the institution, and mm-hmm. and they kick butt, and they have action scenes, and they have to collect pieces of items in order to escape, and it dulls your senses, all mm-hmm. of your senses.
You know, it's bad enough that, I mean, I'm actually mildly annoyed at you for saying those words, and it
You're
reminded
welcome.
Me of the film.
You know? Well, my critic's mantra, I see film so you don't have to, well, Ed had to suffer through that one as well.
Oh.
You want to counter with
other,
that?
other bad ones?
Jack and Jill, Adam Sandler's, and I mean, I'm not an Adam Sandler basher. I want to make that real clear. I made my peace with him his movies a long time ago and have enjoyed a lot of his really dopey comedies. This mm-hmm. film is just incessantly grating and so terrifically lazy. And I've heard people praise Al Pacino's performance as Al Pacino, a demented Al Pacino. That was not enough to make up for everything else that was happening in the film.
For some reason, I'm reminded of, I think, one of the all-time great film criticism lines said about the movie Shane. He said, it's the film that keeps the phrase bad Alan Ladd movie from being redundant.
Jack and Jill, for me, if you saw the good Adam Sandler film directed by Judd Apatow, Funny People, it looks like a fake trailer that the Adam Sandler character in that film would make, and they actually made one.
We are talking about movies here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Will, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Your question.
Well, a very dear friend of mine told me that he thought the movie Descendants really sucked, that it was a real stinker because there were far too many close-ups of George Clooney's face, which he stopped counting at 13, and the fact that he didn't think he hugged his 9-year-old daughter fast enough. And I felt that was an odd choice of how to grade a movie, but I just wonder what the critics thought of Descendants. I enjoyed it for good performances and cinematography.
You're right, thank you very much. You're right. If he's counting, I think your friend likes Mr. Clooney if he's counting how many close-ups there are,
or dislikes him and is looking for a reason to be mad.
There you go. I really enjoyed The Descendants, and this was one that when we had our very secret private film critics lunch, there were a couple in our group that really didn't like the film at all. But I'm a big fan of Alexander Payne. Mm-hmm. You know, when your filmography is Citizen Ruth, Election, About Schmidt, Sideways, and this film, you're doing pretty good.
Yeah, the film that pretty much killed Sideways was the film that pretty much killed Merlot sales for a couple of years.
Maybe this one will do the same for Hawaiian Shirts. I don't know, but this could be a turning point in Clooney's career because this is his version of the Shaggy Dog story. A guy who has to actually be a father to his two girls when his wife goes into a coma and has to face this other very fascinating subplot about land and his family. There's a great monologue about Hawaii that sums it up, which I can't recreate here on the radio, but it's not all Hawaiian shirts and coconut drinks. They have problems too.
Well, and it's a film. I've seen it as well. It is a film about really what you owe, what a legacy is, and how you live up to one.
Yeah, it was number 6 on my top 10, and it was also a family drama that showed a contemporary family. And I mean, the way they approach some of their problems and their language in particular, a lot of families wouldn't do it that way, but they reflected something you don't really see in movies very often, which is a credible modern-day family.
Yeah, it's not a Disney sitcom family. Mm-hmm. They're not Disney sitcom kids. And the kids are getting, especially the oldest daughter, is getting a lot of press for her performance as the sullen teen. Mm-hmm. But it's we have a thing in our house that if a child gets too uppity, we say, you're becoming a Disney sitcom kid. Mm-hmm. So that's
I thought those close-ups of Clooney were, that was showing this where the character was at. It didn't seem to me like it was, lingering over the beauty or anything like that.
The guy's, got two kids and a wife in a coma. And he's got a very old piece of property on his head.
Well, and some of that I also thought too was it was sort of like I'm going to date myself here, but the reaction to Robert Redford when he started to age a little bit too. Mm-hmm. They're lingering. I thought those close-ups lingered on him to show that this is a face of a man who's seen some life and some living. Mm-hmm. So we are talking about movies here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Andrew, how are you doing?
Fine, thanks. How about you?
Doing well. Your question, please.
Yeah, I had a question for both of the critics about kind of the future of movies vis-a-vis traditionally big-budget films, specifically. There was a film, Monster, I think last year that screened at Cannes and South by Southwest. It was it looked like a big budget studio, but was shot on $15,000. And I was wondering if you think that the new technology available to filmmakers is going to change how traditionally studio pictures is being made by independent artists.
Good question. Thank you, Andrew.
Let me start. I'll just start. I compare filmmaking nowadays to like the Reagan 80s, where you're going to get really, really expensive, big budget product placement blockbusters, and then you're going to get cheap films that a studio will hopefully pick up, like a Paranormal Activity, and hopefully make a gajillion dollars off of it. But there's no middle class. Mm-hmm. Apparently making a $30 million film is harder now more than ever before.
And that he's talking about sort of the action-adventure films. We're still seeing a lot of those, but those didn't seem to dominate the film discussion this year quite the way they have in the years past. I mean, there wasn't a single sort of huge superhero movie, for example. Maybe no. Because there were so many of them released.
Part of it is there were so many. I think probably Captain America was probably the best of that lot.
Yeah.
I'm guilty of saying that I actually enjoyed Thor for all of its flaws and, felt like that film spent all of its money in the 3D gods world, and then it get to the second half of the film, which I like to call Fake Town New Mexico.
Yeah.
Which, it's one of those towns that looks like it was just built to be destroyed
about
by comic
book
characters.
About a week and a half before, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, the others...
Of course, that's sort of an homage. That's the way those towns always look in the comic books.
That's true.
The part of the thing this year, too, is that... We had talked at our various critics meetings, and this isn't a year. Last year, when we were deciding on our awards, we fought for films. Mm-hmm. This wasn't really a year to get impassioned about. There are a lot of good films, as far as really great films that you want to champion. There wasn't that much going on this year, in both the big budget films and even the smaller budget films.
And why is that? I know we've gotten a tweet here that probably plays into some of this from a listener named Robert. Actually, it's from Facebook. It says, "Hi, Matt. Four words about sequels and nostalgia trend in movies. Hard times. Comfort food."
Yeah. Sure. Oh, sure. We know.
Yeah.
We don't have to. We eat it, but we don't have to enjoy it.
Well, and I guess the other argument, though, in terms of historically, I mean, the Depression in this country was time for some mm-hmm. really adventurous filmmaking, particularly given mm-hmm. the technology at the time. So...
Sure. I mean, I looked at there's a number of films that I have that didn't make my list. Didn't make the quote unquote top 10. But when you have a film like A Better Life and Meek's Cut Off and Melancholia, mm-hmm. which is, about as light as the Lars von Trier film can be. And something like We Need to Talk About Kevin, which I think was the mm-hmm. most disturbing film of the year in My Week with Marilyn, which I really, really enjoyed. But those are smaller budgets. Mm-hmm. But they're also challenging in their own way. Mm-hmm. If you want Scream 4 for comfort food, go right ahead. I don't mm-hmm. want it.
Well, is there a film out there right now, or has there been this past year, where you think everybody just missed the boat? That said, either that it was very good and nobody recognized it as such, or opposite, one that was really, really praised and you thought it was just awful. Ed, we'll go with you.
All right. Mm-hmm. Tintin. Mm-hmm. I've looked at the reviews, and it's getting predominantly very good reviews, and I thought it was not... I thought it's one of the motion capture films like Polar Express.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was just realistic enough to be creepy, and the dead eyes, the whole, give me a cartoon character, give me a human character. Do not try to morph the two, mm-hmm. at least not now, because the technology isn't there. It's so over choreographed as well that. Nothing feels like it's at stake. It just feels like you're in a theme park watching an elaborate stunt show. I just didn't enjoy myself even a little. I appreciated the visuals in some of the scenes, but the characters, physically were so off-putting. Mm-hmm. And like I said, everything was so overdone that it wasn't fun. Now, and I'm way in the minority on that.
Mm-hmm. Matt, how about you?
I wrote a... And it's a film I lump it as overrated, but I still liked it. I just didn't love it. And that was Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. And part of the reason is because I'm still bitter over Part 1.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still bitter that Warner Brothers wanted to milk all of this. But, even though they're actors, the young kids are now in their 30s. I exaggerate, of course. But you couldn't have made a 3-hour extravaganza and still made a mint on that last book.
Yeah.
Twilight, of course, is now making two films based on the last book. I was just kind of over it. And granted, this film had three endings as opposed to the nine mm-hmm. in the last Lord of the Rings picture. But it just that was a part of I guess what we heard of. That's a part of comfort food that was just reheated too many times for me.
Well, and in some ways, what we're talking about too is the same sort of challenge you faced with a girl with a dragon tattoo or whatever. When you've got a book series like that, when the source material is so omnipresent in the culture, that creates some challenges as well. Because I agree with you, it had three endings. The book also had three endings.
Sure. So.
Right.
And to think about how many books we were talking off air about another particular book. Remember especially after Lord of the Rings and Potter, all of the attempted franchises, The Golden Compass, Percy Jackson, Inkheart. I'm sure I'm missing
C.S.
several.
Lewis, the Narnia.
Yeah, the Narnia series, which went three, and while that last one had to be switched over to a different studio because of costs. So, yeah, you know, we'll see what next fantasy storybook will happen next.
Okay. And what we were talking actually on the big budget action films or earlier, we talked about the fact that there were a lot of superhero movies. We've identified the best sort of as Captain America. Were we in agreement? What was the worst of them?
Green Hornet?
I'm trying to think of Thor.
Green Hornet.
Green Lantern.
Green Lantern.
Green Thor.
No, actually,
yeah.
I actually liked Green Hornet a little bit. Yeah, Green Lantern was kind of pointless. If you're Ryan Reynolds, of course you take that role and you run with it, I guess. But I was kind of burnt out by the time that one came about. And I think Captain America came after that and was still a little more enjoyable.
Yeah, well, followed fairly enjoyable. Closely by Thor. I think there were a bunch of that was the other
Thor
thing.
Was they very polarizing. I kind of got suckered into its lunkheaded charm. You know, Thor looked like the roided up Brad Pitt.
Yeah,
and it's watching Academy Award winner Natalie Portman playing a scientist. I want to find the institute that has all the gorgeous looking scientists. You know, getting googly eyed over this kind of roided up lunkhead.
Yeah, well, and the other thing though that I sort of enjoyed about that film was the fact that Kenneth Branagh directed it. He is not someone I would have thought for a big budget.
No, but it's almost like a Soderbergh thing where you do one for the studio and you do one for yourself. If this gives Branagh another chance to do another Shakespeare movie, which I enjoy, so be it. But it also adds to all the stuff in the fantasy world. You have Anthony Hopkins, who I still enjoy watching chew up scenery, and the rival sons. So that has a little Shakespearean aspect of jealousy and, you know, who's got what coming to them.
Yeah.
That was kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, it was. I mean, the way it was done, it was almost as if Branagh were trying to do Shakespeare for the metaphorically challenged or something.
That's
like
actually
that.
A show for idea, I think.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you
yeah.
know, there's one I want to mention here. We're talking about the big budget films that disappointed. Mm-hmm. We had one that, you know, you try to go into a film with an open mind, but when I walked into Rise of the Planet of the Apes, I was expecting nothing.
Yeah.
And then I got a pretty good summer film.
Because it sounds like a sequel. It sounds like a Planet of the Apes movie. And I remember comparing it to, it was more like Awakenings. You know, you have James Franco, who's trying to come up with a cure for Alzheimer's because of his dad, played by John Lithgow. And it's more of a science runs amok as opposed to shirtless James Franco being chased by Kim Hunter and Sal Mineo and Roddy McDowall and all those guys.
And the original, sort of Planet of the Apes and its series of endless sequels.
And I guess ape fans compare it to Conquest, so that homage is needed. But yeah, it is not a sequel to the Tim Burton remake. Thank God for that.
It was such a nice surprise.
It was, and it was in August because August is a dog month for critics
films
because the big budget stuff has happened and a lot of films get dumped there that have been sitting on the shelf for a while. The studio needs to put something out there. That's what August and really January, February are for. So, we were all kind of pleasantly blindsided.
Yeah, we just were grinning like idiots after the screening was over.
We are talking about movies here on No Limits with our guests, Matt Soucy of WFYI and Ed Johnson-Ott of Nuvo. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, or you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I am John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about movies today with WFYI's own Matt Soucy and Nouveau film critic Ed Johnson Ott. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We've gotten an email question from a listener named John, and with a suggestion, says, if not going out for a movie, what about renting one of the worst Christmas movies, Santa Claus Conquers the Martians?
Now, that's...
Great Fair from 1963.
That's got to be worse than finger quotes, right? Because that thing... I'd still rather watch that than A Christmas Story. Regular version or a Mystery Science Theater / Riff Tracks version. I'm a big fan of, those guys making snarky comments over the movies.
Do you dislike Christmas Story?
I think Christmas Story is... I thought it was overrated when it first came out, and no film, not even a 24-hour loop of Sophia Loren coming out of the boat in Day of the Dolphin, is worth showing 24 hours in a row on TNT. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Don't need that. You know, go rent it. Go buy it.
The second part of this question is also thoughts on It's a Wonderful Life, which was panned when it first came out, and I think...
There's a lot of films that didn't make money when they first came out. It's a Wonderful Life, Wizard of Oz. I just got done directing a stage version of It's a Wonderful Life last weekend. It was a 1940s radio production, and that's another film I haven't watched. I probably watch it every Christmas, and I haven't watched it yet because we've been busy with work and whatnot. So I'm actually looking forward to watching it again this weekend after now having a connection to it with this play.
Well, and I should say also that my very capable producer, Sharon Alsuth, whispered in my ear here during the show that she says she doesn't get it. She doesn't get why people are so enthusiastic
about It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah. She can't get past 10 minutes of it.
Because every time a bell rings, an angel gets its wings. Don't we all know this? Come on, you're going to dismiss Zuzu's theory?
Ed, how about you and It's a Wonderful Life?
I'm fine. I enjoyed it once. It's not a film I ever wanted to see over and over again.
And we're talking about movies here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. We're starting to get a lot of comments via Facebook. One from a listener named Ben says, thoughts on Drive, A Rise of Noir Films, Matt Soucy.
Drive, up until seeing The Artist, was my top film of the year. We talked earlier about homages or nostalgia. Drive stars Ryan Gosling as a stunt driver who also does work on the side as a driver for various crimes and whatnot. And he meets up with a girl named played by Carey Mulligan, and it is kind of a modern noir story where he was going to do one last job, and that's it. But he also runs into big, bad Albert Brooks. And yeah, I said big, bad Albert Brooks, who is great in this film. And it's not only a kind of a modern noir, but there's also this late 70s, what I call navel-gazing criminal films, like The Driver, a Walter Hill film, or Le Samurai, a late 60s assassin movie with Alain Delon. Look him up online, folks. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a throwback, or even early Michael Mann's film, like Thief, with James Caan, with this kind of Tangerine Dream electronic score. And it captures that specific style of film, you know, which maybe a handful of critics or film geeks are going to really get. And I really got it. And Gosling is kind of a less is more, you know, he's like Clint in the 70s. He says about 7 or 8 lines in the whole picture. And it's just real. And also, we talk about brutality in Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. This is a violent film at times. Mm-hmm. There's some violent spurts that I think really rocked people either one way or the other. And I really enjoyed Drive.
We've also gotten a Facebook message from a listener named Robert who says, A Game of Shadows was much better. Guy Ritchie doing more of what he wanted as a calculating sleuth story while making an action film. agree or disagree. That's
Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock Holmes 2, for those who want.
Yes.
I have to admit, I didn't get a chance to see it because the screening was last week, and it, you know, one thing or another, life does come into play sometimes with a critic, and we don't get to see every single film. I did enjoy the first one. It is not your grandfather. It's not Basil Rathbone swinging from a rope and, you know, kicking tail.
No, it's not highly deductive or whatever.
Right. Sherlock Holmes should not have a six pack.
Yeah, well, it's okay. All right. Joe, welcome to the program.
Hello there.
Hi, your question.
Well, I just had a comment real quick. I overheard,
sure.
I apologize, I'm not, I didn't catch the name of who actually made the comment, but that A Christmas Story was an overrated Christmas movie, and I just have to 100% disagree with that comment.
Okay.
A lot of times I will judge a movie's, I guess, success and like classic status by how quotable it is. Mm-hmm. And Christmas Story has to be, in my opinion, probably one of the most quotable Christmas movies out there. And maybe I'm waxing nostalgic because I grew up watching it, but there's nothing I like better than, you know, falling in and out of sleep after after some time and some drinks with family and waking up and just kind of over the course of, you know, 7 or 8 hours of family mm-hmm. time, getting to watch the whole movie as it runs on TNT. Mm-hmm.
Well, enjoy
Thanks
your,
for the call.
Enjoy your
the
mashed
call,
potatoes though. And enjoy your Chinese food as the wait staff sings to you.
I'm with him though. We turn it on Christmas Eve. It's so episodic that it's easy to turn on in the background and then just watch every now and again. I enjoy the movie a lot.
You could do that with a lot of films.
Well, I
Christmas
like
or
doing
otherwise.
It with that one though.
Fair enough.
Well, and I guess
watch the Yule Log channel, Matt. Go away.
Well, you know what? That was still had a better plot than Jack and Jill. You know that.
Well, that's true. And I guess where I'd go with that, the point though about the how quotable a film is, given that it's less so now, but there used to be this incredible effort to try to produce, particularly in Clint Eastwood movies or whatever,
a catchphrase
right. or a tagline or
so
something like that.
Is it Christmas Story of the kid making the pig noises in the mashed potatoes? Is that the big quote?
I'm wondering I realize, and that argument is obviously that would make perhaps Caddyshack the greatest film of all
time. Or the Big Lebowski.
or something like that, where people
are
making lots of quotes. We're talking about movies here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Tracy, welcome to the program.
Hello. I have a comment. I have been renting some videos mm-hmm. to watch as I wrap Christmas presents and get ready for the holiday. And three of the last five I've actually rented, within 10 minutes I've hit the eject button because the language I find to be so foul, I just can't stand it. And I don't see the purpose in, you know, using the F word that much, especially when you've got children that are going to be watching these films.
What were the films, ma'am?
The one that really repulsed me was called Change Up.
Oh,
that was ugly. That was an ugly movie.
Okay, well, thank you for the call, Tracy. We're going to take it up here real quickly and get to other callers as well. Thanks.
I have a daughter. I have a 10-year-old daughter, and we have sat down. My wife and I have sat down and talked about the whole aspect of language. And, you know, to steal a line from George Carlin, I don't believe there are any bad words. Mm-hmm. There are bad thoughts, bad intentions, but they're merely words. So I guess there's a reason why the MPAA has a rating, and then they say at the bottom why the film mm-hmm. received that rating. So,
and that was an R-rated film, and it was just was a truly ugly film. That's another contender for that was this year.
Yeah, that was this year.
That would be a contender
year.
For
make
worst
the
of
description
year.
Of the film for those who did not see it, and so that they know that they will avoid it.
Ryan Reynolds and Jason Bateman body switch and. Swinging single versus married guy, and everything that happens is not only predictable but just ugly. What it says about people is ugly.
Yeah,
you know, but it, you know, it does also. The rating system gives fair warning for what you're in for.
Yeah, so the fact that you know, no disrespect,
you gotta read those ratings.
You rented an R-rated movie with the kids around. So
well, it also. I'm going to switch subjects here.
real quickly. Sounds like it wasn't a particularly good year for Ryan Reynolds here. If you're talking to Green Lantern, you didn't like. This one you didn't like.
Crazy Stupid Love, though.
Okay. So.
No, that's Ryan Gosling.
Oh, what did it say?
Ryan Reynolds.
You know what? Karma's getting back at him for being with Scarlett Johansson. A lot of guys hated him for being with Ms. Johansson. So
were there any other big losers in terms of the actors who had just got awful years this year? Stars?
Boy, who didn't? That's a good I don't mean to dodge your question, but I can think of an actress who really fared well this year, and it's Jessica Chastain. Who was married to Brad Pitt in Tree of Life, married to Michael Shannon in Take Shelter. She was the blonde, kind of not so great housewife in The Help. Okay. She was also in Coriolanus, and she was in The Debt, where she winds up being a young Helen Mirren. That's quite a year for an actress, so bully for her on that.
Yes. Kim, welcome to the program.
I wanted to just get your thoughts on a movie that I don't think very many people saw. It was called The Guard with Don Cheadle and Brendan Gleeson. And I must say, it had the foulest language I've ever heard, and it was hilarious.
I love The Guard.
Thank
the Guard
you for the call, Kim.
The Guard is number 5 on my best of the year list. It comes out on DVD and Blu-ray on January 3rd, which is an important thing because the Irish accents are so thick in this black comedy drama that it'll be a good film to turn the closed captions on. But it's a great movie.
Do the subtitles.
Subtitles.
We talk about homages. This is kind of a throwback to the buddy cop film or even like 48 Hours or Lethal Weapon. It's Don Cheadle and Brendan Gleeson, and it's from the same writer of In Bruges?
The brother of the writer of In Bruges. It's a wonderful
Donovan
movie.
Donovan Brothers. And In Bruges is great as well. The lady called earlier about language. In Bruges and In the Loop and The Guard take language to an artistic level.
But they're all rated R.
Warnings given. Yeah, but I mean, it's not just dropping F-bombs or particular words, but it's especially a film like In the Loop, which I loved a couple of years ago. It's almost Shakespearean in the way the word choices are. So
if you like In Bruges or you like in the dark black comedies, or Brendan Gleeson and Don Cheadle, just make sure January 3rd, get your copy of The Guard.
That's probably the best cop film of the year, easily.
Yeah.
And what other, a film we haven't mentioned yet that I loved, saw this summer, was Midnight in Paris. I hadn't seen a Woody Allen film for
that was
a long time.
Nice trifle, I mean, in the dessert sense. I mean, we talked earlier, the recurring theme has been nostalgia. I think it's his most enjoyable film in a long time, and he loves that era. And hopefully, if this film makes people want to check out F. Scott Fitzgerald and Django Reinhardt and Salvador Dali and maybe even more Woody Allen films, then mission accomplished. But that was a delightful film to see in the middle of summer, and I was really happy to see it stayed in theaters as long as it did, and it came out on DVD and Blu-ray this week.
Yes, yeah.
And the fellow that played Ernest Hemingway was just, he was oh, really that was, fine.
That was, oh. I want to fight somebody!
He's... Hemingway is almost impossible to parody now, but that guy managed to achieve it. So,
and if you happen to see Law and Order L.A., he was the bald guy.
Oh,
yeah,
that's what we're here for, folks.
I did not know that. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Certainly.
I just wanted to make a comment about the content of a movie, The Help. I think the acting was excellent and superb. I'm not a critic by any means, but in my opinion, it was good. But the content of the movie, I feel, should be required curriculum in every middle and high school in America.
I think
that it's a movie that teachers should use to promote conversation and dialogue and exchange of ideas so that because of the state of black America overall today, in many categories, is not good. And this movie helps to understand how this particular part of our society landed where they did. I think this is a great movie for exploring why we are where we are today.
Great. Thank you for the call, Mark.
I think the baked good element of the film might keep it from out of the schools, however.
If we're going to have... Yeah, that's true. If we're going to have a film of white people helping black people, can we watch To Kill a Mockingbird first?
Yeah.
I like The Help. I mean, it is... But we are in a time-honored tradition of films where white people help black people. Cry Freedom, even a film like Round Midnight, and this fits into that category. Yeah, there's a scene Ed mentions involving a certain pacer, but you know, Viola Davis is very strong. Emma Stone, Bryce Dallas Howard. It's a really good cast.
I can't remember Octavia's last name, but
yeah. Well, and but the point you're making too is also one that civil rights leaders and activists have made for a long time. It's sort of as if this freedom was something that was given to black people, that it wasn't it misrepresents sort of the nature of the struggle itself.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, to some degree, I guess we could talk a little bit for a minute or so about whether what responsibility films have to that sort of accuracy or truth.
I've always felt that if a film makes you go do research, whether it's a documentary and you think the documentary filmmaker is full of garbage and you want to prove him or her wrong, then that film did something to you to inspire you to go and find out about that particular subject more. Or if, like I said, a film like Midnight in Paris, if you want to find out more about artists from the 20s, if you talk about it, if you share it with people, whether it be friends or family, I think film still has a powerful impact of doing that so long as you know how to work those tools.
Well, and it's an old argument. I mean, obviously Shakespeare, we tend to forget that a lot of the characters he was writing about were actual historical figures,
mm-hmm,
as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that he didn't write about them with pinpoint accuracy either, but he was looking for larger, more metaphoric truths to some degree. It seems like every now and then we have this kind of discussion, generally when an Oliver Stone film comes out.
But, so you're saying that Shakespeare is Victorian Oliver Stone?
I guess so. Well, I feel like we have just now come to the point where, frankly, we could have another hour's discussion about this whole idea of authenticity or accuracy or whatever, and I would be willing to do that. I'm not sure that the host in the next show would be. I would like to thank my guests, Matt Soucy, for joining me. Matt, great to have you here. Please.
Film Sociology tomorrow, Fridays at 5 on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Great. Great. Please tune in for those. And Ed Johnsonat, Nouveau's film critic.
Right.
Pleasure having you here on
the
show.
It's always good to be here, John.
It's a fun and lively conversation. We are going to be off with live shows next week. We're going to replay one of our greatest hits, the ones about computer technology and electronic gifts. The show was designed to help you pick out your gift. Now that you've got it, it can help you figure out how to use it. We will be back on January 5th when we talk about the electronic age of libraries. Please have a wonderful holiday season. I'll look forward to talking with you in the new year. Take care.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Public Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday at 1 p.m. for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m., and you can listen online at WFYI.org.